tell you what's next. This little chat is fresh off the Zoom room floor. I found a new friend. Her name is Toni Nagy. I hit record quickly and I put her on the spot with that old deep, who are you question. But before I get to that, let me read you a little bit about Toni, what's online about this fantastic human who agreed to think out loud with me. Toni's a stand-up comic that, as she says, quasi-radical, somewhat existential, and mostly funny. I personally found her magic on Instagram. She has hundreds of thousands of followers across platforms, y'all. You'll find her. I did, and I fell in love with her crazy. Let me keep reading. Her comedy is like an acid trip, but with equal opportunity genital jokes. She's also a writer, filmmaker, sketch comedy creator, and codependent, if that's okay with you. Get it? Okay, yeah. So Toni is a filmmaker that has written, edited, directed, and acted in over 50 sketch comedy videos that together have upwards of 1.5 million views. Who knows? This may not be up to date. That's a lot. I'm sure there's more. Cavelight Productions is her independent media company. She's a dancer. She dances like a, these are my words now, like a woman possessed with the spirits of awesome, with free, empowering, engaging, yum. Shit, I didn't even realize. She's very talented, you guys. I'm talking from the top of her head to the bottom of her toes, lovely, committed to being a good person, and I'm very blessed. I'm very blessed. And the voices say, aww. Hey now, settle down. Toni and I connected this morning, me in my cozy, colorful Colorado corner while she piped in from her yard in New Hampshire. Besides a super awkward left turn about boobs that I guess I needed to get off my chest. Get it? Oh my God, double whammy. I'd confidently say our first encounter was as meaningful and enjoyable as I anticipated. She's great. Listen in, find her online, Toni Nagy, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. She's the real deal. I'm really tickled to be able to think out loud with her. Hello, everyone, on this beautiful day in October. It's gorgeous here in Colorado, and I am joining a new friend. I feel like I've known you for a little while already. I would like to introduce Toni to everyone, but I'm going to let, I just did like a total IMDb on you, and I was like, what the fuck am I doing? So hi, Toni, will you introduce yourself to everyone that could possibly be listening in and let them know who I'm thinking out loud with today?
Oh, introducing oneself is a complicated conversation, right? To have, because I'm like, well, my spiritual self, my professional self, my shadow self, like which self are we unveiling and unmasking? I guess from a professional perspective, I'm a stand-up comic and a content creator and a filmmaker and a writer. So I have been prostituting myself and my ideas and my thoughts on the interwebs and social media now for many, many years. And that has kind of been a genuine blessing for me in a lot of ways, even though it also can be the bane of my existence. So that is basically who I am. I also like to fancy myself as a philosopher and a professional clown.
I dig it. I dig every single one of your personalities, by the way.
Oh, and a dancer. How could I forget?
And a dancer
as well. Yeah. And yeah. I own a dance studio. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. And I just want to get into it because I'm immediately intrigued. All of those selves have to line up in some way to be you that you introduce, right? There's a thread of you through all of it. And how you present yourself in all of those forms. Is it easy? And was it always easy to be you in all of what I adore as someone looking in from the outside?
I think I make it easy to be around me. That's the easiest part about me is people have a good time around me. I really know how to be a friend, I think, and to prioritize the needs of others. And I like to listen. I like to engage. And so I make an easy trip to be with me, although I can be a bit like peyote if you are really connected to me. My husband's always like, being married to you is like being married to psychedelics, you know? So every time anything happens, I'm like, it's time to face your darkness. And he's like, God damn it. Like, can't you just like drink a Bud Light and chill? And I'm like, absolutely not. Our shadow side must be addressed. So on the one hand, I'm like always a ball of contradictions, but I think the easiest part about me is being around me because I'm also a people pleaser.
I was going to say, going to call you on your, because I was reading like, I mean, that's what it is, right? Is this people pleasing? Like I'm the same.
People pleasing.
Yeah.
But I got to say, I mean, there's a part of being a people pleaser that I do like because one of the environments I want to create when I'm with another person is for them to feel like they can be themselves completely. I want to provide them with opportunities of unconditional love. And I think the journey I've been on is understanding that unconditional love does not mean that I never have boundaries.
Right.
So I think having boundaries can also be helpful to people, or having ways in which I communicate to them like, oh, I don't enjoy being treated like that. Yeah, right. I think I can do that in a way that isn't withholding of love and affection. And so I kind of think one of my personal, you know, crusades that I'm on is to provide a sense of self and collective acceptance when someone is around me, and for them to feel comfortable that they're not being judged by me, which is ironic because on the one hand, I think that I can be very judgmental of groups and group scenarios. Like if I'm in a group setting, I always feel very much on the outside of that group. And then I kind of can default into a judging, like, why don't I feel connected to this group mentality? But when I'm with someone individually, I am probably one of the lesser judgmental people you can get around because my moral compass is very windy. Yeah. I mean, it is very difficult to shock me. Yeah. My compass is like, woo, woo, woo. I can justify all sorts of things. So I think that's one of the things that's easiest about me is to be around me. Being inside of me, I think, is a lot more of a complicated journey.
Yeah. Yeah. We get to a place where that complicated journey is something that we're aware of and that we're in the driver's seat around, rather than being the people pleaser, you know, on high on helium, like just trying to keep up with everything, all that you've got spinning. Right. I mean, there's like, it's almost like I call myself a reformed human. It's like a reformed people pleaser. I'm the same way. I mean, it's like people are comfortable in my presence. I appreciate that. I have a friend who's no longer with me that would say a strength overused is a weakness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like depending on the dial in my dashboard, how much I've got my people pleasing turned up, I can like cross my own boundaries pretty quick. And I didn't know that though. I didn't get control of that, if you will, which is a total like, you don't have control of anything. I don't even make sense saying that. But a concept of that until not that long ago. I mean, and it's not to say that I spent, you know, years like willy-nilly. I was. I mean, the same helium, it was like a helium balloon with a little prick in it, like, you know, until that kind of wake-up call that, I'll call it a kind of midlife, like what's going on here? What's the outcome you're aiming for here? And that took work to get from complicated to acceptance of my complicated self. Does that make any fucking sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think the way I see almost any attribute or personality trait that we have is there is the ego journey of it and then the soul journey of it. And so for people pleasing, I think there is the soul journey around empathy and compassion and having an awareness of another person's experience of you and of themselves in the world. And I think that's like the positive, more positive aspects of it. And I think for the ego's journey, which, you know, would probably be focusing on the more detrimental either to you or to others, is that there is this desperation for love and acceptance. Mm-hmm. And so within that desperate need to be loved and accepted, you kind of create a persona of yourself that is going to fold into the origami expectations of others. And when you do that, you are impacting an authentic connection because you're always one step ahead of what you think that person feels. Mm-hmm. And so rather than being fully in the moment or fully connecting, mm-hmm. you're anticipating a reaction that that person's going to have of you or of what you're saying. So I think that that's the duality and the cosmic dance that I do as a people pleaser. And I don't necessarily plan to resolve that in my life, but yeah. all I can do is kind of twirl around it and work on the choreography and develop my own sense of personal growth. So yeah. I feel as if, oh, progress is happening. Yeah. And I think that's the main objective that we can ask ourselves is to be in a state of perpetual progress, even though at times it might feel incredibly slow, borderline on stagnation and or moving backwards, which can happen. I guess like planets can retrograde, so can yep. we, you know. Yep. So yep. sometimes we're gonna retrograde, but yep. the intention, I think, is to kind of have the spiral of growth moving upwards, even though sometimes you slide back down. Like if you're climbing up a slide, sometimes you slip and you're going to slide back down.
I think that's part of the realization a lot of folks are, it's less about the black and white. You know, let me back up. I think that there's the instant gratification of pharmaceuticals and shop retail and everything that we have. Ooh, I just threw something. Everything that we have at our disposal to get rid of things quick, that the concept of going with the flow and knowing how to, you know, internally manage yourself rather than it's annoying that this hurts or that I have a headache or, you know, and not get to the bottom of things is something that is for some folks, they were raised in that, but not a lot of us were raised with that kind of listen to your body. What's it telling you? You know, thinking about the connection between mental and physical and, you know, so that when we get hit with things, we're not in these, it's almost like blood sugar and diets, right? Like spiking the blood sugars in our gut, you know, and then we drop it out the bottom of it and our body is like, what are you doing? And nobody can figure out why we can't lose weight and all, you know, whatever. It's like, we're expecting this black or white of mental health, of physical and mental connection, of connectivity to ourself, when really it is it doesn't stop after we die. This is like, you know, free flow and energy from before we were born on through after, right? And the more we can sink into that like flow, like the better. But none of us, that is a really woo-woo way of thinking, I think, to a lot of people. That's like, Yeah.
Well, I think personally that physical distress is often the higher self communicating to the ego through the language of the body, because that's what inspires you to listen when you're injured or you're hurt or you're sick. And even though I see myself as somewhat body centered, I'm a dancer, I talk about somatic healing all the time, I obviously am still getting sick. I obviously still have chronic pain that I'm managing and dealing with and investigating and exploring. And so I think that regardless of where you are in the spectrum, your higher self is going to be communicating to your ego through ailments. Mm-hmm. And even though I intellectually know that, and I do see every ailment that I have as an...
Uh-oh.
of self-reflection. You know, sometimes I'm just like depressed about it and sad. I'm like, oh, my hip hurts. And then I'm just in a bad mood for a week, or, you know, I had a cold for a week and I was like, this sucks. I'm bored. Resting sucks. But I was trying to listen and, you know, have a spiritual journey with it at the same time. So I think there is this duality and dichotomy that sometimes we feel as if we're all one thing. And I think that in truth, we ebb and flow from our ability to be tapped into wisdom, because it's certainly exhausting to always, you know, just be an open funnel for all the wisdom of the self or the universe. I think that's potentially very difficult unless you're a Buddhist monk in a cave, you know, no distraction besides that sort of exploration and examination. And even then your mind will come up with the distraction. So I think it's probably impossible for the human consciousness to stay in that state. I mean, even enlightenment it's a moment. It's not a continuum. So I think just having a little bit more patience and compassion for the coming in and out of awareness and coming in and out of maturity, emotional maturity, is probably the vibe that will provide us to be a little more forgiving of ourselves and then maybe a little more open to receiving the messages if we're not always in a state of like shame and guilt or judgment of the self. And obviously also there is that concept of attachment and non-attachment, and you know, how difficult is that to truly embody and practice? But just coming back to the practice of non-attachment, you know, they call it a practice. It's not a meditation goal. It's a meditation practice. These are therapeutic practices. So I think that in America, there is a Western pressure and or mentality that you have a goal, you achieve that goal, and that goal is then completed, rather than, oh, this is just an endless practice. You know, it's not that sexy of a sell. You know, oh, this is something that will continue to be difficult. Yeah, man. I was like, I love it.
I love it.
That is kind of the case. And it's funny, I was talking to my my husband, he got COVID twice.
Bummer.
And the second time but the first time he was so sick. He was so ill, but it had a massive implications on his personal growth. And he really did kind of catapult himself into a new stage in a certain sense of dealing with all sorts of, you know, things that he's been grappling with. And so when he got the second COVID, he was like, what the fuck? Just really pissed. And he was also with a friend who drinks and smokes all the time, smokes cigarettes, you know, doesn't take his good, never gets sick, never. And he was like, fuck this shit. Like, he's so mad and so irritated. And I was like, you know, I was like thinking about it. And I was like, you know, you're sensitive. Like, you're a sensitive dude. You're a musician. You're sensitive. You're gonna be sensitive to the energy and the illnesses around you, unfortunately. And you're also sensitive to the crying of your higher self to address these issues that you need to address. And took him a couple of days to get on board. But then again, he made a lot of really, you know, powerful, important life changes that he was really needing to make and was kind of procrastinating on. So I also think that we have different degrees of hypersensitivity. Absolutely. And when you're a sensitive person, you might get hit kind of more with, you know, a bevy of lessons. And it may feel as if like, oh, wow, everything feels like it's against me, which, you know, we can all feel like victims of our own lives or victims of the universe. But then when you kind of turn it around and say, oh, I am the architect of this event, even though that can seem victim blamey at the same time, but I don't know. Again,
we're fucked, no matter which way
we're playing in the waters of duality. We're playing in the waters of contradiction. So I would rather kind of see, you know, everything as I am designing a reality, even though my reality often is fraught with suffering. Mm-hmm. I am learning from this. And I guess that's a perspective that is better done in hindsight. But, you know, when you can have it in the moment, like, this is all meaningful. Everything is meaningful, even pain.
It is.
Mostly pain, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's something that is a part of it. I know, you know, being, I was the highly sensitive that just drank her way through, you know, praised for being highly sensitive and being able to do things well because of how sensitive I was to other people's needs and reading their minds and taking care of everything, right? But numbed all of it through a lot of vodka, and the idea that that sensitive person could actually do that, that it was a superpower. I'll just keep it elementary, you know, that when you realize that you can go, when you realize that you can use and protect yourself and your sensitivity, and that you can use your sensitivity to influence others. I think that's such a turn in just mindset. I don't think you get there very easily. You have to go into those shadows and those pains and those really shitty feelings to figure out why you were doing things. But the perspective, yeah, it's beautiful. And like you're talking about your husband, it's like, I always think about being in a boat, and then every once in a while I'm in a boat in a bottle, and every once in a while I'll realize that I'm in a boat in a bottle on a bigger boat in a bottle. Does that?
Yeah.
And like
a fractal.
Yeah. And I'll be like, oh, okay, I see where I was. Yeah. And I see now, and somebody's agreeing with me outside the window screaming, we have these woodpeckers that are stalking us. Do you have woodpeckers in New Hampshire?
We sure do. Yeah.
Of course you do. I think they're probably speaking to each other through Zoom right now. Yeah. They're like fully sitting on fences and what do you do? Case the joint. They're casing my joint.
Yeah.
In real time. I want to go in a totally different direction because I can relate. You did a routine. I read a blog just this morning about boobs and body shame. And weird to say out loud to somebody, but part of my, like, why that hit a chord with me is because I didn't want my big boobs and I didn't want the attention I was getting.
Mm.
And so I got a boob reduction. I cut them off. I fucking hate them. I knew I had them. I knew the power I had with them.
Mm.
It was obvious to me the power I had with them. But I hated that.
Mm.
I hated it. I hated that I loved it.
Mm.
And so when I finally was able to, I chopped those fuckers off.
Mm.
Isn't that crazy? That struck me this morning as like the, you know, you talk about the yourself standing on the stage and having eye contact with the woman in the front, you know, and that she became the voice, right? And it was an interesting, it brought me all the way like back to that feeling of just get these fuckers off, and finally laying there with control over it finally. And then coming to afterwards and finding out that he says, well, yeah, I want to reassure you that they're even. We sat you up and we made sure that they fall, you know, correctly. I'm like, you did what? You sat me up? I was knocked out. Can you imagine? Just think of a picture of yourself completely knocked out, and they have sat you up to see if your boobs are
like a Weekend at Bernie's kind of moment.
Did what? And I said, they're not small enough.
Oh.
I wish you would have gone further. He's like, well, I don't hear it that often, but I'd like you to just sit with these and And so I did. But talk to me about, I don't know, just like go back to the state. I don't know. Just think out loud with me about frickin' boobs.
Well, what happened in that story was that I was invited to do these stand-up shows in New York City. And I used to live in New York for 10 years. Yeah. And when I lived in New York, I was kind of a club kid. I would go to the clubs a lot and I would go to the VIP rooms. And that was something that was part of like my identity, my ego's journey, my searching, my sense of value. And so I had to kind of put that behind me in a certain sense, A, because I left New York, you know, so you can't go clubbing in the woods of New Hampshire. But I was going to New York to do these shows and I had three shows to do at the same venue. And after the shows, I was going to meet one of the girlfriends who I used to go out clubbing with. And so when I was getting dressed, I was kind of hoping we would go out somewhere, you know, afterwards. And so my intention of getting dressed was to look cute. And I put on a tank top. Now, this tank top, it literally is just like a white ribbed tank top with like a little screen print of a cat. You know, like it really wasn't that revealing or compelling of a tank top, but it was the intention of the tank top that I feel was meaningful, was that I wanted to look hot for after the comedy show. I didn't even look that hot, P.S. But the tank top was the intention. So I get on stage to do the first show and there was an older woman in the front row and she was kind of the first person I made eye contact with. And then I suddenly just started to feel really self-conscious about revealing my body at all. And I know there's a lot of female comics who like look hot when they go on stage and that's like cool for them. They enjoy that. That makes sense to them. And for me personally, I don't know how to truly feel my funniest when I'm trying to look my prettiest. Mm-hmm. In fact, I cannot access my funniest if I'm trying to be my prettiest. And so there was this existential crisis that I was feeling with her looking at my body. I'm not trying to brag, but I have a good body in the sense I'm 5'10", you know, I'm very tall and I'm thin because I dance a lot. And so I have an aesthetically good body for Western standards, you know, and we can pick it apart, but it's good enough. And so I felt this self-consciousness about putting that out there because that was my intention because of the whole going out thing afterwards. And I bombed that set so hard. Like it was like performance art. I literally performed to silence. Like everyone in the audience just completely rejected me. And I was like, okay. And I had two more shows to do at that venue. And it's embarrassing to completely bomb, especially because it was a hot room. You know, everyone did well before me and everyone did well after me. I never think there's a bad audience, to be honest. You just don't connect to them. I've seen one of my favorite comics, Mike Brill. He's the best crowd worker I've ever seen. He could charm any audience. It does not matter. He really taught me. I'm like, oh, no. It's not them. It's me. So it was like a great audience. Everyone had a good time with them, but me. And it's embarrassing because then you have to go back into the green room and all the comics are like, huh, good set. And you're like, oh, nice. So between these two sets, I was like, I cannot go back on stage with this tank top. And I went and I found one of those, you know, it was late at night. I found one of those souvenir stores and I just bought like an extra large I Love New York t-shirt. Because that was what they had. And I wore that t-shirt. And the next two sets I killed. I did great.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And it definitely really opened my eyes up around intention and beauty and comedy. And just my journey with it is that I am definitely going to be more free to explore what's funny if I'm not worried about being pretty or if I'm not trying to be pretty. And that also I personally feel a certain sense of shame around beauty and wanting that to be like a reason why I'm interesting or a reason why I'm special or a reason why I'm compelling. Yet at the same time, I think you can only really ask those questions and explore that if you genuinely kind of accept that you're beautiful, right? So this is an interesting, you know, I think duality and journey of women is this like security slash confidence, insecurity and confidence. You know, I think about this a lot as a female comic because you want to be confident on stage, but if you're too confident, it's a turnoff and people do not like that. And they will reject you. But if you're insecure and you're too insecure and you're genuinely feeling insecure, that's also very uncomfortable and they will reject you. So you can have like a humble persona of being overconfident, or you could have a confident persona of being insecure. Yep. But really your intention and the energy you're bringing on stage has to be like this perfect balance of confidence and humility, which is so difficult to like truly access and truly find. And you know, it's like makeup. I don't really wear makeup. But the only, am I not wearing makeup because I'm such a righteous feminist? Like, no. Am I not wearing makeup because I think, you're pretty enough without it. You're fine. Yeah. Am I lazy? Yes. Do I like to wash my face? No. You know, so, but there's a way that I can reject makeup because I have confidence.
Yeah.
And it's not just because I'm a righteous feminist. It's confidence that I'm cute enough as is. So I don't know. I mean, I think this is a bit of the challenge of femininity is your beauty is a commodity. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we trade on the stock market of human value because women's sexuality and their beauty has been a commodity since the dawn of the patriarchy. So do we blame ourselves for that? Yes and no. I mean, there's an entire, you know, multi-millennia year system designed to brainwash and infiltrate our minds around this topic. So all we can do as individuals is start unpacking it for ourselves and, you know, examine the influence of this programming and of this brainwashing.
Yeah. When you stepped into the space of being a comedian and being on stage and being in dance, did you know that you would influence conversations around self-love and self-acceptance and that you would be, I mean, I know you had a goal of growing your brand and your, but I mean, did you know that your magic was to touch other people like you do?
That's compelling of a question to contemplate. I think that for me, this is my therapy. I actually don't see a therapist. Not because I've only seen a
it's
therapist.
It's funny, you're laughing. You're like, I don't see a therapist.
I know, because it's like everyone sees a therapist and probably people would be like, you should see a therapist. I do not see a therapist. I've only seen one therapist once in my life and it was actually super helpful. You know, she really helped me out. And I was like, oh, thank you. Yeah. But I only saw her once. And I think for me personally, my therapy is what I'm doing. It is these explorations that I am taking from an artistic standpoint and a creative standpoint and an exposing myself standpoint. I think there is a way in which if you're a writer or a comic or, you know, when I write a lot of personal essays, I'm not a fiction writer. Well, I guess I am with scripts, but I do a lot of personal writing as well. There is an interest in exposing yourself. Mm-hmm. And when you expose yourself and when you kind of undress and unveil in a public scenario, there is both a vulnerability to that and a complete armor that comes with that, you know? So on the one hand, yeah, I am kind of exhibiting a really, truly, genuinely vulnerable side of myself. But on the other hand, there is this armor that I must have and do have in order to do that in the first place. I think a truly, truly sensitive, vulnerable person would not make the life choices I make. They would definitely not be going on stage with a microphone to, like, you know, put yourself out there in that way, because stand-up comedy is brutal. I don't know one stand-up comic that doesn't bomb every so often, you know, and that's a hard experience to have, or even putting yourself on the internet, which I've been doing for a very long time. So I think I must be, you know, be both, like I'm saying, like hyper insecure and hyper confident. And that's just kind of what happens when you're, when you live in extremes.
Yeah.
I think you're more apt to put yourself out there.
Yeah.
When people are a little more balanced, perhaps, maybe they don't have that same compulsion, because it's a compulsion.
Yeah. Do you have to go into your own shadows? I guess it's less of a question, and I would imagine that you have to go into your own shadows to tap scripts and pieces. You go into human, I mean, you imagine shadows. Like, what a compelling place to be, to like be looking for the stories in shadows that haven't yet been revealed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think for me personally, I am in the shadow world most of my life. So by creating art around that, it gives that kind of personal journey I'm on a different type of meaning, you know? And I think regardless, that's where I am. And for me personally, before I had these outlets that manifested a lot more in depression, not that I don't get depressed now, but not in the same degree, because everything is potential content. Everything is a potential thing to share. You know, I don't cry very often. It's maybe like once or twice a year, but I think I cried last year and I'm like, oh my gosh, what a perfect video opportunity, you know, because it's so rare that I cry. And, you know, of course, sometimes I just have my own emotional journey without documenting it and filming it. But sometimes I don't, you know, sometimes every emotion I feel, I'm like, oh, let's document this. It helps honestly with non-attachment in a certain sense, because I'm turning everything into a display in a certain, in an effort to be seen, heard, accepted, loved, what have you. But in that display, there's humor to me. It's funny that I'm doing that. It was funny. I was genuinely really sad in that video where I was crying. I was truly sad, but I was also laughing, because I'm like, it's really fun. You're making a video about this, Tony. You're hilarious. And then you're so silly, you know, like, who are you? What drives you? And then that made me laugh. And then I kind of just moved through my sadness quicker. So I think comedy is my medicine. Dance is my medicine. Yeah. These are all different, you know, modalities for me to deal with my spectrum of mental illnesses that, you know, plague me.
That are beautiful. Yeah. Well, it's, I mean, you've touched me, so that's all that matters in my world.
Hell yeah, yeah, I honor that.
I respect. I have respect for folks who I can hear their voice, you know, and I, because I think that the world works really hard to stamp it out, and so. I do think that, you know, you have a magic that, yeah, there are folks that this is their healing. It's their therapy for others, because we need folks that this is about questioning everything. You know, this is about being inspired by someone who loves to dance, and the thread of your expression and your mental health coming out through everything that you do allows other people to, I mean, if you just a quick flip of the beauty that does come out of the internet, of people tapping into this, let it go, put it out there and just let it fucking go. You know?
Yeah.
It doesn't you want to go revisit it? Fine. Scroll back through. Remember that time, and you can get right there and go back. And, but until then, just fucking let it go. Mm-hmm. And So I do. I have a lot of respect for you, and I appreciate that it is your magic and that you're so willing to share it. So, you know, that's my foo-foo for the moment.
Thank you. I'm truly honored and grateful. Thank you.
What kind of mood are you in today?
I'm in an okay mood. I have, you know, I had some good career things happen to me yesterday, and I'm a Capricorn, so I love career. I love working. Yeah. So I'm in but also I feel a little bit, peaceful about it. I think for so long I had a deep, deep, deep striving and a desperation when it came to my career. And I'm slowly, becoming more relaxed about it. And I think a way that's like very crucial and important, because when I had that desperate energy, it was unattractive. Yeah. For others, it's not appealing.
It was my same helium.
Yeah. Right? It's like, I think one of my core wounds is I am not enough. You know, that would be one of my core issues is not being enough. And so I think that I'm kind of chipping away at that and not trying to oversell myself or push things that aren't meant for me. I mean, I think there was a TikTok kind of vibe that was going, a viral kind of intention that was going around for a while, that was telling people to say the mantra, I do not chase, I attract. What belongs to me will simply find me. And I think conceptually that's really beautiful, is that just you attract and what belongs to you will find you. And just like sitting in that place of that we all, you know, we all will have a path that you have to work really hard for. You know, I work really, 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 really hard. And that's all I can do, is I can do the work. And then I can present the work, and then I just keep going. I just keep doing the work and presenting the work and doing the work and presenting the work. And I think that's been something that's really important from a mental health perspective, is just finding the joy in doing the work and knowing that you're not going to please everybody. Not everything's going to work out. And you may have this really specific goal and objective, and maybe there's another plan for you and you don't know that.
Oh no, come back.
I think you know what's best for you is to do the work and just keep doing it. A true Capricorn, just keep going up the big hill. So, yeah. And that, but I also have been sick for like 10 days. And so then I'm always like, I would like to not be sick anymore, but I have to just kind of go back into life. So
yeah,
that's where I'm at.
Yeah. This think out loud with me, has been a lot of my healing. Why do you particularly, do you say yes to invitations? How do you accept invitations on where you spend your energy?
Oh, I say yes a lot. Uh-huh. Absolutely. I say yes a lot, because I think everything has value. You know, I always, unless there's a time conflict or it's asking me to do something like drive you to the airport, I will drive nobody to the airport.
No, that's next.
Absolutely not.
Oh, but in terms off the table, of, apparently.
Yeah. Forget it. Unless we're doing a podcast on the way to the airport, and then I might consider it. I mean, I have this fundamental belief that the universe just puts things in front of me that are meant to be explored. You know, I kind of do operate on that level. I don't know if that's logical, but that's what feels right for me. So usually when someone comes and finds me and feels connected to me, I trust that.
I love it. I trusted reaching out. I mean, I did it. I was like, I can't believe I just fucking did that, but I need to talk to her. So I did, and you did, and now we're here, and now we're, yeah, nearly done.
So. Yeah, totally. And that's how it goes. Yeah.
and then next will be, well, I would love to keep in touch. I'm appreciative of just your energy and what you put out into the world. And, you know, I mentioned in particular, one of the ones that early on that got my attention on Instagram with you was around our relationship with mirrors. And, it hit me on a day that was, I could walk back in and really just have a conversation with myself, you know, around how are you using mirrors in your life? And what is this reflection that you're looking at? And are you using it against you? And the words that we use against ourselves and, so much of it. So, yeah. So keep on being you, please.
Well, I have to say, I mean, it really does give my life a sense of meaning when somebody is like, oh, I watched something you did and it brought X value to my life. That's such a gift to me. And I'm so appreciative of you telling me that and also feeling that. And it does really warm my heart in this deep way to know that I would have that impact on somebody. So I'm super humbled, truly, by that. And that means a lot.
That's cool. That's cool. Well, come drive out to your airport, come to Colorado. I have another gal who's fucking nuts. And like, I want to do like a rebel yell kind of, female power. I don't know. I'll stay in touch, but you would be great for it too. So
that sounds very groovy. I want to do some stand up in Colorado too.
Do you? Yeah. Let's do it.
There's a scene there. So that sounds really fun.
Let's do it. You heard it here. I appreciate you. So, and your time and your beautiful background, you're surrounded by yummy.
Yeah, I had to just be outside. So thank you for indulging that.
Yeah, for sure. And vitamin D is good for feeling good and
yeah,
get well soon.
And, thank you.
I really do. I appreciate you spending time with me and thinking out loud with me, and, I'll put fronts and ends to this. And, any last thoughts before I sign off with you?
No, but thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Yay.
Yay.